At the end of the day, it's up to the panel to decide what the outcome will be.
That is not acceptable as a professional athlete these days.
You can't assume that that is the way of the world now.
I've just seen too many times recently where he's just been hit.
We just don't have that sort of foot on the throat where we really just put teams away.
He looked twice the player when Ponga's on the field as well. Yeah.
On the Big Sports Breakfast, time now for Pressing Matters.
Yeah, so just before the news, we were speaking about, well, specifically the issues in the Tigers-Bulldogs game. And, well, Casey Badger's obviously been heavily criticised for the performance as well. And then she copped a barrage on social media, the sewer, and some of the crap that ended up there was just completely unacceptable. But here's what Graeme Annesley, the NRL head of football, had to say yesterday in his weekly briefing.
There'll still be a percentage of decisions that people want to argue about. And we, you know, we come here and we pull the games apart and we talk honestly about when we get things wrong and we defend our position when we think we've got things right based on public commentary. But, you know, and we're happy to do that. We are happy to do that. But we just can't cross that line where it becomes a disincentive for people who want to be involved in our game. It becomes a disincentive for us to attract young referees. Referees who in 10 years' time might be refereeing in the NRL, but they won't be refereeing in the NRL if they say, no way, I'm not doing that, not with that level of criticism.
Hard to disagree with anything Graeme had to say there.
I think he handled himself really well. I think we all need to be careful as commentators, but you've also in this position to give an opinion on what you think is right or wrong. But you can't afford to cross over that line of making it personal. And if you make it personal or you make it gender-based, then all of a sudden we are in a lot of trouble in terms of attracting people to the game, and in particular females, you know, getting them to become officials of the game. But I think on the weekend, in my opinion, we've got to accept that referees make bad decisions, but you've got to try and work with those officials to try and minimise them going forward. And the bunker sometimes is thrown in with the decisions that the referee makes. And because the bunker is the story that we're talking about, it seems as though the referee gets thrown in with that as well. And then we just talk about the referee rather than breaking it down into separate things in the game. And one of the things on the weekend that I thought we had a shocker with were the bunker decisions rather than a lot of the things that were happening on the field, where the bunker could have intervened and helped the referee.
I agree with you, Loz. Like, the bunker gets time. The ref's on the spot, making a call directly on the spot. Yeah, the bunker gets a little bit of time to look at it. Help them out. Like, they're meant to be their eye in the sky. Like, the bunker, there's no one's watching you. There's how many eyes are on Casey Batcher that whole game. And just on those people that personal attacks on Kate, like, go away. Like, I don't want people like that in the game. I don't want supporters like that in the game, because players, refs, coaches, everyone, we all have shockers. But there's no need for a personal attack on our families or their families. Like, who do you think you are to do that? You know what I mean? It's her job.
What did you make of James Graham last night on 360 talking about how we should have more people in the bunker? Like a coach, a player, and the referee.
Well,
I think if you have more people, you have more eyes and you see different things. Everyone sees something different, so you're probably going to make it harder.
Different opinions?
Yeah.
Mm. I think it'll make it, for me personally, I think it'll make it harder.
Yeah.
Because, like, your what you think is a, let's talk about obstruction compared to what I think it may be different. So how do you come up with a decision in quick time?
That's what I was thinking. I was thinking more about, you know, when we had two referees, for instance, or one controlling the ruck, and at times they saw things differently.
Mm.
And if you've got too many eyes, you see too many different things. So while in theory it sounds good, I'm not sure whether that'd be the right thing to do.
Someone said have someone do every game. Just sit in the bunker all weekend.
Jeez, they get hammered.
Bunker in. Imagine that. Just stay there.
Just don't come out.
Lock the door.
Like you're hiding from COVID. You're just not coming out of the bunker. Get the gas mask and away you go.
David Fifita, big feature of the back page, as we already saw this morning. And let's have a listen to, well, Buzz and Gordon Tallis discussing, well, his value on Fox League last night.
It is the decision of the salary cap auditor to put a value on what David Fifita is worth. I'm not sure everyone in the game thinks he is a million-dollar player.
Well, the Raiders did. South did. Well, I think the Bulldogs did. I think the Broncos did.
Well, look.
So there's four clubs that did, and they've been around a long time.
I would suggest giving as much as he's blockbusting, barnstorming, all that sort of thing, his delivery, weight, regularity of his skill, I don't think, in my view, $1 million.
That's courtesy of Fox League last night. So, you know, some debate about, you know, well, if he's paid, you know, $1 million plus now, how can he be valued at, you know, $850,825? But we've always argued, haven't we, Loz, that whether he is actually worth $1 million.
Well, I think he's playing a lot better now than what he was two or 3 years ago when he signed for the Titans.
For 1.2 report.
Yeah, and he can still stay at the Titans and receive that type of money. But I think he's prioritised a competition over staying at the Titans. Now, a lot of people will say, why doesn't he stay with the Titans and build a squad up there? He might feel as though that's going to take too much time and he hasn't got that time on his hands. He wants to have instant success and he wants to build his career quickly. Everyone's different. Everyone's got the choice to make and everyone can go and sign where they want to sign. You know, you can't hold someone if they don't want to be there unless he's on contract, and you might play hardball. But if he's got a clause in his contract that allows him to move on at the end of the season, he's got every right to go and explore those options. Now, whether he's worth $1 million, I think he is to some clubs. But the good clubs, the ones that are flying high at the moment, possibly not. And they're not going to pay $1 million, but they'll pay $800,000, $850,000 for him over a period of time. And you put him into a side with good halves and good front rowers. Like David Fifita is a beast. He's a different back rower to a lot of back rowers in the game. He's just not a back rower that runs a line. He's a back rower that you can give him early ball. He can cut back under. He's got good feet. He's got good strength.
Well, he doesn't really run lines.
Nah.
He always wants it early because he knows what he can do. And as a half, sometimes he'd be a little bit hard to play with, but then at the same time, the amount of quick play the balls he's going to get you is ridiculous. But for me personally, boys, the way I look at it is, what's Cleary on right now? 1.3?
1.4?
Well, he wins your games.
Yeah.
Reece Walsh, he wins your games. At the moment, Fifita doesn't win you games. And that's the way I look at a $1 million player.
Yeah.
The Titans have come last. He's not winning them games just himself. Like, look at Nathan Cleary in that grand final. He won them the game by himself. Reece Walsh, nearly every single game for the Broncos now, he's scoring a try, setting up 2-3. He's winning them games. And they're the type of players that I would pay that type of money for. But then you look at it, as you just said, Loz, Fifita at $850,000 at Penrith, well, it's still, for me, in that team, it is nearly $1 million. Like, because he's... The players he's going to be around, oh my God. Like, they will just make him a 10 times better. You know, if he goes to Penrith, what they'll make him do, they'll make him accountable for everything he does, not just big attacking plays.
No.
He'll be a defensive-minded player, and he'll turn into, you know, one of the most hard-working, possibly, back rowers with all the stuff that we know he can do.
But you imagine him at a Penrith, what he'd be worth. Like, if you're getting him for 800,000, say. In that Penrith system, the way he'd be playing, people would look at him and go, he's a $1 million player.
Exactly.
Just because he's in that system.
Mm-hmm.
And there, you've got someone then at the bottom, after when he's off contract, goes, well, we're going to get him because he's worth 1.1, 1.2. And that's how they get valued. But then you go into that system and you haven't got the same players around you and your market value can drop back. And I think we've spoken about salary cap and how teams can get themselves in a bad position. You've got to be able to truly value a player. And the key to it is signing a player on a certain value and him playing better than what he's actually on, rather than the other way around. Signing someone on a $500,000 contract and he's playing like a $200,000 player. If you've got too many of them in your team, you're going to go backwards pretty quickly.
Okay, some AFL now, and well, GWS, they've elected to accept the 3-match ban for Callum Brown for rough conduct for his bump on Tom McCartan in the Sydney Derby on Saturday. And McCartan will miss at least the Swans match with Fremantle. And we know that he's had a lot of concussion issues over the course of his career in the AFL. Here now is what, well, Giants midfielder Josh Kelly had to say on the high shot from Callum Brown.
I mean, it's tough because I think, you know, from my point of view, there was no, you know, malice or intent in the action. But at the same time, you know, we understand the need to protect the head in the current game and just in general. So, yeah, it's unfortunate. You know, I think Brownie's, you know, a bit down about it all. But like I said, you got to protect the head. So I think we're understanding of it. But we'll miss him out there, definitely.
That's Josh Kelly there. I heard Lachie Ash, another Giant, yesterday say as well, he said there's got to be, you know, a place in footy for accidents as well, that, you know, that it is a contact sport. And, you know, a lot of what we've spoken about on this program in regards to accidents in the NRL and getting sometimes, you know, judged harshly. What did you make of this, though, Loz? I'm just showing a replay here again because he doesn't do a lot wrong, and just the fact he's probably the same height.
Well, your natural reaction when you go for the ball at the last moment when you know you're not going to get it. So you and I are both going for the ball. Yeah. So I'm going for the ball, you're going for the ball, you're going. At some stage you go, oh, I can't get it.
Yeah.
So what do you do?
Well, you brace. Because you're about to...
That's exactly right.
Contact.
Yeah.
You brace for the contact. So I think what they want them to do, which is not what your body would suggest you do, is to continue on going for the football.
Which you're never going to do in that split second moment.
So the reaction is always to brace yourself when you know you're the one that's going to miss out. So for me, I see that as a football accident. Now, I can understand why Codes want to come down hard, but I think 3 games for that, I think, is harsh. I'd be happy if it was a game suspension.
I think,
or possibly
three games,
two.
Is ridiculous. And
it's unfortunate that he got knocked out. But I still see that as a football accident. But I know that all sports have to protect the head. So what I'm saying is, if you do it and it's a deliberate act, or you could have pulled out of that act, then you get graded higher and you spend more time on the sideline. But if you want to penalise players for a football incident and you still want to suspend them, I wouldn't be suspending them for as long as if it was intentional.
So what does he do?
As in,
what does he do there?
Well, to give you context, and this is the big sort of, I don't want to say cultural difference, but difference in mentality. With AFL types, I heard a couple last night, as saying that Brown deliberately went for McCartan's head.
He went for his head. He's competing for the ball.
I know, but I'm telling you, there are AFL types who played a lot of footy who say that he was going at his head. And we're watching it here in the studio now, and we're seeing him just brace. He doesn't lift his elbow.
I see him going for the ball.
And there are similar, and unfortunately, because of their height at that particular stage, when he braces with his elbow, McCartan, unfortunately, his jaw's right there.
Yeah.
There's no way. There's absolutely no way he's gone for his head there.
No.
I can nearly guarantee it. So what they're saying is they want him, like you said, Loz, it's what your body. So right now he knows he's not getting it. What, run past it and let the Swans guy get the ball and keep running. No. He's got to do something. You know what I mean? He's not doing that on purpose, but he's not going to run past the ball.
No.
You lose that competitive, you're gone. That little moment,
that's exactly
you're gone.
Right. So I think what they want them to do is to run straight into them without bracing.
Yeah.
You're probably going to damage each other.
Yeah.
I can't believe that.
Worse.
Said that they think he was actually
going. Oh, mate. Yeah. I see it all the time. They think the amount of times I see accidents.
So, you know, if he doesn't brace himself there
and
just keeps going, what happens then when the collision happens?
Well, anything could happen. Could get ugly, couldn't it?
Well, that's what I mean. And then what do they say?
Can't speak for them. I'm with you, Loz. I think it's ridiculous.
Yeah. And again, I understand the crackdown, and I understand in that situation, if you want to give someone a suspension, that's fine, but I think 3 weeks is harsh.
That's a long time, Loz, for that.
Yeah.
Unintentional. Yeah. Like, I didn't care. What
I don't mind if it's a week, possibly two, but for 3 weeks is I think, it's a bit too much.
I'll read you some quotes from David King. Of course, North Melbourne played a gazillion games. No, that's not good. You can't brace like that and make that sort of contact anymore. He chooses to bump. At the end, he chooses to bump. I know he's coming at speed. He's got some decisions to make. But the one outcome that he must prevent is contact with the head. But guess what? It happens. Like,
how do you stop the contact? Yeah,
I don't know.
I think you could do probably more damage if you continue to keep going.
At that height,
yeah.
The higher, because he braces, he goes a little bit lower. So the higher, it's definitely going to take his height higher in the chin. He sort of...
Yeah, and that's what I mean. Everyone's got different opinions on this. Mm. You know, there'd be other experts that would say, AFL experts that would say, what's he supposed to do?
You know what they'd be saying? Stick to NRL.
Yeah, that's
boys.
Exactly right. But, yeah, and they judge it probably differently to what we do.
Yeah, that's what it's getting at.
But I see that as a one-week suspension rather than a three-week suspension.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. All right. That's Pressing Matters on a Tuesday. Good on you, Josie.
Very pressing.
Where's he going? Good on you. You're only here for an hour.